For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts.
From Meat Eater's World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review with Ryan Cal Callahan. Now, here's Cal.
Okay, on this week's special edition of Cal's Week in Review, where you get to learn all sorts of extra stuff about the great world of conservation, if you feel like you'll never know it all, you're correct. But that's what all fun things are about, is constant learning, right? And helping us on our journey, as always, the right-hand man, Jordan Sillars, who does most of the heavy lifting here. I just do the lip service.
You're just a pretty face, Cal. You know, that's your role in this endeavor.
Yeah, you know, eventually I'll age out, because we don't age well here in Montana. We're proud of the sun and the wind. But if you want to see more from Jordan, you can always go to themeateater.com, where he's going to challenge you on a wide variety of topics. So,
yep.
But the real reason we're here today is to learn the soil and water conservation districts. As this country was formed, conservation districts were also formed in order to, well, you know, I should really just let the pros handle this. So Cameron Gustafson, Water Resource Coordinator, Soil and Water Conservation District, Carlton, Minnesota, and Alyssa Bloss, their conservation specialist at the Soil and Water Conservation District, Carlton, Minnesota. Thank you so much for writing in and getting our wheels turning on conservation districts. So Alyssa, why don't you jump in and just let us know what you do and why you're here.
Yeah, thanks, Cal. I'm so happy to be here today. Huge fan. I work for the Carlton Soil and Water Conservation District, and I've actually been in the Soil and Water Conservation District world for about 14 years now. And ultimately, what we do at Soil and Water Conservation Districts is we help restore, enhance, and protect our great state's natural resources by assisting landowners, cities, schools, you name it. We're there to help folks, technical assistance. We have funds available. We do education outreach. But my position specifically, I kind of wear a lot of hats at the district. And I really enjoy working, especially with folks on shoreline restorations, pollinator habitat, deer hunting habitat. And I've been really passionate about conservation for forever, pretty much since I could walk. I was out hunting, fishing, camping, you name it, out there doing it with my dad and my family. And just very passionate about our outdoors and very, very passionate about helping our public, our private folks enjoy, enhance, and restore our natural resources too.
Cameron, how about yourself? What are you up to on the soil and water conservation district side of things?
Yeah. So I guess compared to Alyssa, I'm relatively new in the SWCD world. I've been working in natural resources since 2014, so almost 10 years now, in one way, shape, or form. But my role as a water resource coordinator currently is to manage and direct all the watershed planning in our county. So we're a part of four watersheds in our county. I manage and direct programming based on those watersheds and based on our newer Minnesota program called One Watershed, One Plan. But I also identify outside funds that we can utilize to address other natural resource concerns that are kind of water involved. So stream restoration projects, culvert replacements, dam removal projects. But that's kind of my bread and butter in this position. I came to this position from an outreach and education coordinator position. So prior to this position, I was still in the Carlton SWCD, but my main duty was to direct and manage our outreach campaigns. So basically connecting landowners and members of the public with the conservation programs and assistance that we offer in the county.
Excellent. And I think where we should start, right, is like, where would the average person bump into someone from the Soil and Water Conservation District or have a reason to get in touch with one?
Yeah. So what's really, and I wish I would have mentioned this earlier, what's really, really great about what Soil and Water Conservation Districts do is we're kind of your next door neighbor. So anybody can bump into us. We really pride ourselves on being that local unit of government. We're not necessarily state. We're not county. We're not federal. We just really pride ourselves on being that boots on the ground conservation organization where we get to have that relationship with the landowner. We get to build that relationship from doing a site visit for free, providing folks with expertise on how to implement a conservation practice. And if they want, we can help fund that and then maintain that relationship afterwards to make sure that their projects are being successful. So we're all over the community. We're visiting with farmers, schools, like I said before, cities. We try to make our presence known as best we can. We're small. We have a smaller staff. Every county in Minnesota does have a SWCD, except for, I believe, Hennepin. I think they might have a watershed management organization. But we just really pride ourselves in being your next door neighbor. I think that was that pretty good, Cameron? I mean, we do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I guess the only thing I'd add is, you know, we're at a lot of the community events, the fun days down the street, you know, we're going into schools, teaching lessons there, try to show up to a lot of, you know, conservation based meetings, Trout Unlimited meetings, Ducks Unlimited meetings. Like Alyssa said, you know, we're your next door neighbor. So you can bump into us at the grocery store. We might not necessarily give you a little sales pitch on conservation at the grocery store, but we try to get ourselves in everywhere. We've got a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page and all that stuff. But, the beauty of it is we're right down the street from most of the people that we serve in the community.
And what are you going to do for us? What's Soil and Water Conservation District do?
You want to take the first stab at this one, Alyssa, and then I can fill in the gaps.
Sure. So, we do so much. And I mean, ultimately what we really try to focus on is water quality, soil health, and then habitat. So like, for instance, right now I just put together an application for a landowner just down the road to do a 3-acre Halen restoration to a prairie restoration. So we've got 27 plus different species of grasses and forbs in there to benefit our pollinators, but also all of our other beneficial insects. They also love deer. So we made that a really nice seed plan for deer. Maybe they want to bed down in there. I know her husband hunts over that plot every year. Today, actually, we're getting ready for our board meeting on Monday. Today, I actually put together a plan for a landowner that's doing, how many acres? 23 acres of cover crops, and then 13 and a half acres of pasture and hayland interseeding. So, and then I think earlier this week, I attended an invasive species meeting with lots of different partners. So we're by Duluth, Lake Superior. Folks probably know where that is. We had folks from MDA. We had folks from DNR. We had folks from, where else? Lake Superior College. We had folks from other schools. We had Monarch Buddies. We had other conservation groups involved just to talk about how we want to combat, address invasive species in our community and in our region, since we are pretty fortunate in that we don't have a lot of really established invasives up here, except for maybe tansy. But I guess those are just a couple examples of what we can do for you.
Yeah, I'll jump in and fill the gaps too. You know, we can help forest landowners, somebody who's got forest property, put in a woodland stewardship plan. So it's just a plan on how to manage your forest to achieve your goals. Part of that is implementing conservation practices in your forest. So it could be as easy as like a forest stand improvement or a forest harvest out of there. Alyssa touched on helping ag producers or farmers. And then as far as water quality and kind of urban conservation goes, if you've got some erosion that's happening in your backyard or, you know, an area of your yard that's pooling up in water, we can help you put in a rain garden, which is just kind of a depression in the ground that's planted with a bunch of native flowers and grasses that provides habitat and treats that rainwater before it enters. You know, here, if we were to do it at the office, it would be the St. Louis River, which is the largest estuary to Lake Superior. So I guess those are just a couple little additions there.
Oh, and you know, Cameron, you know what I forgot to mention, what we were pretty excited to talk with you guys about is Northeastern Minnesota is really well known for our trout habitat. We've got some really amazing trout. I mean, we can literally just go out our door here at the district and throw a fly in the water or cast a line and catch some trout. And we've got some really great folks that are smart in water quality, data sampling, habitat around these streams. And so we're really trying to focus on either restoring that habitat, either by easements or planting more riparian buffers, to ultimately, you know, cool down that water, to keep it cold for trout, provide shade. And then, any soil erosion that's happening, we want to get that under control by buffering that shoreline with either herbaceous or woody vegetation. But we've got some really great trout habitat up here, and we've got some pretty cool programs happening with that. Getting rid of culverts that are maybe perched or have lost connectivity to other streams. We're trying to replace those. So that's pretty cool. That's been fun to work on.
Yeah, there's not a lot of places in the country that have more human connectivity to water than the Great Lakes region, right? So, it's amazing. I was just down in Florida and we were talking about like the construction of the Tamiami Trail and how that was punched in with basically zero regard or local knowledge about how water flowed.
Yep.
At the time, right? So what other examples do you have on projects that you're currently working on and really how soil and water conservation districts may work with other groups on larger projects too?
I'll take this right off the bat, and I'm sure Alyssa's got a bunch to add to it. One of the most exciting projects to me that we're working on, so kind of the eastern portion of our county, we have a tributary to Lake Superior called the Nemadji River, watershed. There's a sub watershed in there called Skunk Creek. And back in the 60s and 70s, a bunch of dams were created along this creek, along these series of creeks, I should say, to increase. It's a really flashy river, and it's got really fine particulate clay soils. So it's really prone to erosion and sediment being distributed, you know, being taken from the soil into the river. And so since about the mid-90s, we've been working on removing those dams just because that is prime brook trout habitat. Some of the best trout streams in Minnesota are actually in our county. And so those dams, what they're doing is they're preventing, you know, both fish, but also macroinvertebrates from being able to travel up and down the stream. They're slowing water down, which is causing those temperatures to rise. And so a dam removal is not a small project. So partnerships is kind of a key thing to leverage when it comes to doing those types of large scale projects. So, you know, for an SWCD, the landowner is probably the most important because those dams are actually on private land. They were permitted by the DNR back in the 60s or 70s for who knows what reason. But we get in touch with the landowner, kind of describe to them the ramifications or the impacts that those dams are having on our aquatic habitat. Then we get in touch with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Trout Unlimited, the DNR, NRCS, Pheasants Forever for some habitat improvement projects after the fact, Rough Grouse Society for habitat improvement projects after projects are completed, and you know, a series of dams were removed on Skunk Creek just a couple years ago, starting five years ago. I think the project ended in 2021, and now we're partnering. You know, we're getting local volunteers from partnering with Trout Unlimited to do some. We're calling it effectiveness monitoring program. It's basically seeing if those dam removal projects, you know, are now achieving the goals that we thought they would achieve. So that's just one example of a project that incorporated a whole bunch of partners. I know we partnered with local schools before the dam removal to do like water sampling, just to get those students connected with their, you know, the watershed that's right down the road from their school.
And Cameron, you didn't mention that. So the Nemadji is actually the biggest contributor of sediment to Lake Superior. It's pretty insane. I mean, there's lots of streams entering into Lake Superior, and it's nuts. You drive across the bridge over to Superior, Wisconsin, after a rain event, and even from an airplane, it's wild. There's just this giant, giant clay-colored, orange-colored stream going into the lake. So what we're really trying to do in that Nemadji area is create some watershed retention to keep that water on the landscape, because that clay is just not impervious. It doesn't allow any infiltration to happen. But we're making a difference in that watershed by doing what Cameron said and a bunch of other different conservation practices, just to keep the soil and the water on the ground somehow.
And what's the most common issues you run into in regards to keeping that soil on the ground?
Well, you know, I guess just in general, when we work with, you know, farmers, we have some really great farmers in the community, actually just south of here in Renshaw, Minnesota. We've got lots of community supported agriculture. Folks are really, really into being sustainable and soil health. But then there's other farmers too that, you know, they're kind of doing what their parents did, and they're plowing, they're chiseling, putting manure on when they probably shouldn't be. And so a lot of it is just kind of how things have just been, and it's just what they're used to. So just trying to talk to folks on different ways to incorporate soil health practices or conservation practices into their farming routines, their tillage practices. And we have actually, and this is kind of a carrot too, you know, we've been recognized nationally through this, it's called the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. And Cameron, what's the total acreages on that for how much has been implemented in?
at the end of 2023, we just surpassed 1 million acres in the whole state. I haven't gotten Ryan's board report yet, so I don't know what the updated numbers for Carlton County is, but.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's great to show folks that too, you know, folks are doing it and there's challenges all the time in trying to talk to folks about conservation. But if you've got programs that can help fund these practices, if you've got folks like us that just want to help or not regulating, I mean, that kind of helps us out too.
Which of you listening right now took a class in school about Family Finances 101? No one? Me neither. Like the importance of a will or a college savings plan or even life insurance or estate planning, we have to know these things. But how do we figure it all out? That's why I'm excited to partner with Fabric by Gerber Life. Life insurance is important to me because I don't want to be a burden on anyone ever, especially when I'm dead and I can't chip in to, you know, lift heavy things and do stuff like that. That's why I have life insurance. And I know you don't want to be a pain in the ass because you're listening to my podcast. So get life insurance. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you've got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/cal. That's meetfabric.com/cal. M-E-E-T. Fabric.com/Cal. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Pay attention here because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months. Wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks. Or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meat eater, but you got to use the promo code meat eater. That's promo code meat eater, okay, at twc.health/meat eater. Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. Now, this is a good innovation here, and it solves a real problem, okay? So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools, like a griddle on your grill. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. There's no use of coatings, okay? You can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Now, the problem with griddles, everything rusts. No one talks about how bad everything rusts. The reason they don't, because they couldn't fix it until now. Well, Weber's new rust-resistant technology, your Weber grill will last for years. When used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, reducing the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. With the new Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
What would be like the top three reasons somebody should get in touch with their local soil and water conservation district?
Well, top three, man. I'll give my top three, Cameron, and maybe you give your top three.
Sure.
We work with a whole bunch of different folks. So I guess what I've been really excited about recently is we've had the opportunity to work with kids in schools, you know, so kids need to get outside more, in my opinion. And the outdoors is just great. I think everybody should try to go hiking and hunting and fishing as much as they can, because it's the best thing to do in your free time, right? So, you know, having the opportunity to work with schools, and I just did a, I just applied for a grant through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to do some invasive species work in the Cloquet School Forest. So what we did there is, I guess just a brief overview of what we did there is we went and did a kind of an identification class with the kids. I think it was fifth grade. And then I went out there and taught them how to do some mapping with EdMaps. And then they actually did some removal themselves and then watched a contractor do the work. You know, we were able to pay for all of that through a grant. So that was pretty cool, just to involve the kids like that. And then, you know, if you're another reason why you want to, you might want to contact SWCD is like erosion. So you've got erosion along your shoreline, you're mowing to the shoreline edge, and you've got some sloughing going on, you've got some ice heaving going on. And we really try to encourage planting those really deep rooted native plants. So like up here, we've got coneflowers, black-eyed Susans, purple prairie clovers, whole bunch of different native plants. And then what's been really fun to do is just habitat. I really love putting habitat back on the landscape. In my previous job down at Scott Soil and Water, I was down there for about, 9-ish years, and just converting those large acres of corn and beans to pollinator habitat, pheasant habitat, deer habitat. And it's just been really fun to do.
And I imagine you run into landowners who are like, oh, the stream's eroding my property, I need to put in a retaining wall. Mm-hmm. And you get this opportunity to be like, you know, that's an option, but this mm-hmm. is the downstream effects of right. what a retaining wall would do. Right. And your water always flows downstream, doesn't stop at the 3-strand barbed wire fence, right? Mm-hmm. And you can plant stuff at relatively low cost. I imagine there's all sorts of matching incentives, even tax incentives to do this as well. And then here's the byproducts of planting native things that retain that soil mm-hmm. That you probably didn't even think about, which is, mm-hmm. you know, native bird species, pollinator species, and just something a little prettier to look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll answer my top three reasons for somebody to get in touch with us too. So I guess this is kind of hyper local to our portion of the state. But let's say you have a property owner near water, like you were talking about there, Ryan. And you want to do what you can do to keep the water quality of your lake or the river that's in your backyard in good shape, but you don't know what the best way to do that is. We're your local experts, so you'd get in touch with us, and we'd likely come out and I guess Alyssa would likely come out and help you kind of figure out how to go about planting a buffer between, you know, your mowed lawn and the lake. Number two, another large land used up here is forest. And so let's say you have a forested property and you want to manage it for trails, you want to manage it for bird watching, you want to manage it for rough grouse habitat. But again, you don't know exactly how to do that. You'd like to get some financial assistance because some of those practices can be a little spendy. You'd get in touch with our forester in our office here, and he'd come walk the property with you and you know, potentially write a woodland stewardship plan for you, and we cost share some of those forestry practices. And number three is just, let's say that you're a good-hearted person and you value bird watching or watching bumblebees in your backyard, and you just want to do something that kind of helps, let's say, monarch butterflies. You'd get in touch with us at the SWCD to get some expert advice and get a plan written up, and we can help cost share most of those practices too, so we can help pay for some of those practices. So I guess the lake shore, you know, river front topic, the forest topic, and just the general habitat topic are kind of the top three that come to my mind.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we keep talking about cost share too, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with the CRP or Conservation Reserve Program, familiar with the Environmental Quality Incentive Program. These are federal programs. And what's really great about, I mean, we use those funds too, but what we again pride ourselves on is we have lots of local funding. And so with a lot of these different programs, you're waiting maybe a year to know if you're getting funded, where with soil and water districts, we have monthly board meetings and projects are getting approved every month. So a landowner, like today, I had a landowner sign an application today for our board meeting that's on Monday, and knock on wood, they make the decision, the board does, but that project's going to be funded on Monday. So they can get going and get their project going next week if they want.
How many soil and water conservation districts are there? How do people find their local?
I believe there's 89 in the state. We have 87 counties. Every county's got one. We just have a couple huge counties in the state. So St. Louis County, just to our north, is like the size of Rhode Island. So they've split that county up into two. And I'm not sure what other counties split into two, but there's 89 of them in Minnesota and a bunch more across the United States. So I would just type in your county name, Soil and Water Conservation District, and I'd imagine, you know, most, if not all of them, have a website with some phone numbers that you can give a call to.
That's great.
I have a quick question here. As you're describing a lot of these things, it seems like these are things I imagine a state DNR would do. So what is your relationship with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources? I imagine you work with them very closely, but how exactly are you related to them?
Well, we partner with them, like you said, on lots of different things, actually. So like, for instance, I in Minnesota, we have this really amazing, some folks think it's amazing. It's called the Wetland Conservation Act. It was established in 1991. And we want to protect our wetlands. So, but the Wetland Conservation Act, the folks that administer that are either, is your local government unit. So here in Carlton, it's the county. And then the Board of Water and Soil Resources, which is state, and the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and then the Department of Natural Resources. So we work with them monthly in with wetlands. And then, if we're doing a trout, if we're doing a project on a trout stream, we'll have to get some permitting through DNR. Like I said, yesterday I was at an invasive species meeting and DNR was present for that too. And then, you know, I don't think Cameron has really talked about this much, but our One Watershed, One Plan. So we just received, I think like $2 million to do conservation projects in the St. Louis River watershed. And DNR was really involved in helping plan. And this is kind of Cameron's deal, but DNR was involved in planning that too.
Yeah. So I guess DNR touches on a couple different side of things. Alyssa mentioned the permitting and the Wetland Conservation Act side of things, but Minnesota just recently has started, within the last 10 years, has started this program called One Watershed, One Plan, and it's a natural resource management program that focuses on watersheds instead of jurisdictional boundaries. And so towards the beginning of the plan development process, the DNR actually comes up with what they call a landscape stewardship plan, LSP. And that's includes all this different data about our natural resources, from forestry to ag to water quality to, outstanding resources like wild rice and trout habitat and sturgeon habitat. And that is the kind of the foundational data that we build our One Watershed, One Plan off of. What comes out of One Watershed, One Plan planning process is called the Comprehensive Watershed Management Plan, which is a 10-year plan that is very intensive. And it kind of gets down to every 2 years, we have a set of goals we want to achieve in each one of these specific topics, from wetlands to stormwater to forests to rivers and streams to lakes. And yeah, the DNR is very involved with that, especially up front when with data acquisition and some mapping that they provide us to kind of build that plan off of.
What are the biggest threats that Soil and Water Conservation District sees when these planning periods come up, the different interests involved? What do folks need to be aware of, and why should they be engaged?
I'll jump in on that one. So one thing, I wouldn't call it a threat, but it is absolutely a barrier to implementing these conservation practices is folks just aren't aware of what an SWCD is. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, but we are not a regulatory entity. We are strictly here for voluntary purposes, and that's what I see a lot of beauty in that. You can choose to work with us or not. And so just understanding that SWCDs are here to help, we're here to give advice, we're not here to tell you what to do, and we're not here to give you a fine if you're doing something wrong. I guess, that kind of public awareness is I wouldn't call it a threat, but it's definitely a barrier. Alyssa, do you have anything to add?
I would say that is the biggest barrier for sure. Folks just, we're government in a way, so people just, some folks are worried government, which is okay, to each their own.
So what's the education step, the easy education step? Do Soil and Water Conservation Districts have newsletters that they send out? How do folks get educated in their local areas?
What's been really fun is what our jam has been lately is sending out these letters to folks. So for instance, we just did a targeted mailing to folks that live along the Midway River, which is excellent trout stream. And we don't want folks to be mowing. We don't want folks to be, doing all this stuff to affect the water quality there and the habitat. So we sent out some targeted letters to these folks, and then we put on a workshop. And unfortunately, that workshop was closed. It was last week, and man, we got like 2 feet of snow, I think, last Monday. But we do things like that. We'll put on workshops. Like for instance, we just did two create a rain garden workshops where we made it super simple. Folks can come and learn how to put in a rain garden all by themselves on their own property. They're about an hour and a half long in the evening. We provide cookies, snacks, treats. Who doesn't like treats? And so we do lots of work. We do lots of different workshops, and we will do some educational mailings like flyers and brochures and things like that.
I'll add too, in Minnesota, lake associations are kind of a big thing. It's a kind of a group of people that all live or own property around a lake. And, I attend a few of those lake association meetings every month or quarter or twice a year biannually. I attend some of those just to sit in. If people have questions, they can ask. I like to hear kind of what the current topic of conversation is, and it's always interesting to me. And it's very cool to see what people kind of do on their own. So we attend kind of those local group meetings, lake associations, different, local conservation organization meetings. We do write and send out a monthly email newsletter to folks who subscribe. You can type in carltonswcd.org and scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and sign up for our newsletter if you're interested. We try to get on the local news stations every now and then. If we're doing something interesting, we'll always, send an email like I sent out to you guys saying, hey, we're doing this cool thing. Yeah, it might be cool. It might be of interest to you to do a little, 30-second, 1-minute clip on it on the evening news. We get on the radio stations every now and then. Yeah, and those events are big. We get pretty good turnout to those things because kind of like Alyssa said, we go through a lot of this data and we're like, all right, what's the best bang for our buck? Who should we send these invites out to? So we send paper invitations to, our targeted audience, but we also open those up to the public, and they're in the newspaper. We pay for ads to put in the newspaper. We get those ads aired on the radio, put it on Facebook and Instagram and all that good stuff. We're getting kind of creative with our outreach strategies. So,
and we like to think that we're smart, but there are some smarter folks out there in the conservation world, and we'll do these education events with partners that, like, for instance, U of M Extension, we work really closely with them too. This guy from PCA was supposed to come and present at this shoreline restoration workshop we were supposed to put on last week. So, and like Natural Resources Conservation Service, they've got an office up in Duluth. We work a lot with them and with agriculture, with engineering, designing, things like that. And so we're bringing in our partners. We've got this endless list of partners where we're all supporting each other. We support them. And it's just really great. And especially up here in northern Minnesota, we have smaller communities and we just really value that. The culture up here, folks are really into the environment. And we're doing all these workshops, not just us, we're working with other folks too.
And I gotta add too, one really creative way of doing some outreach and providing a service for the community that Alyssa spearheaded, I want to say 2019 or 2020, was our native plant kit and seed mix sale. So we partner with a company kind of west in the western part of Minnesota, or they're called MNL, and they grow native plants, plant kits, and seed mix, and they sell seed mixes. So we kind of host a sale through the district up here. You know, there's kind of a demand out there for people that want high quality native plants, and we are kind of just a middleman between MNL and the folks up here that want those plant kits and seed mixes. So although it's a sale, it's, you know, we're selling them at a discount. You know, we don't really make any money off of it. We just want voluntary conservation to take place and slapping up those flyers everywhere and people walking down the street saying, oh, you got some really nice flowers in your front yard. Where'd you get those? That's, I guess, free marketing for the SWCD. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Alyssa, since that's kind of your brainchild.
We've been the largest sale in Minnesota with this Community Habitat Partnership Program for about 4 years now. We sold 220 kits. Our record was 220 kits 2 years ago, and we're already past that as of today. And our sale goes through July 14th or June 14th. And I mean, that puts acres and acres of habitat on the ground with voluntary conservation. We're not paying folks to do this. They just want to do it by themselves. So it's just really cool to see. And ultimately, that's our goal as a Soil and Water Conservation District is we want folks to do this stuff by themselves. You know, we can provide the knowledge, we can provide the engineering, the design, the surveying. We can do all of that for free. And then hopefully that landowner or that entity will just implement this project or this practice on their own dime.
Absolutely. Let's put us all out of jobs, right? But it is, it's word of mouth. It's having that awesome flower bed out on the street or that nice, cool corner where all the brook trout collect because the neighbor next door doesn't have any of that, right? It doesn't have any overhead cover. So a lot of looking across the fence can be healthy sometimes, right? So in this modern age, you can find your local soil and water conservation district. There's a lot of help and resources there. And ultimately, it's going to make your place, your property values go up. Your peace of mind is going to be much more healthy. And it's probably going to be a place that the kids or grandkids want to come back to and hang out because you put in that work ahead of time. So thank you very much for coming on and shedding some light on the Soil and Water Conservation District. And we'll circle back up with you if we get folks who write in to ASKCAL. That's AskCal@TheMeatEater.com. If you have questions, let us know. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood pellet grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood pellet grill.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.